This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Welcome. The title of tonight's installment is Who's White, Part 4. I've never done four parts to a podcast, but I think the subject really merits it. And there has been a mixing of two basic themes here. I've read some opinions of others whose opinions I respect about who's white. And I've also tried to give some historic background as to who this group of people are that can claim to be white, who we should think of as white biologically and historically. But there is an ideological component to it as well, and that's why I'm reading some of these thoughts and ideas from other people. I got some feedback and a comment on part three that was fairly negative. From a commenter who signed as Christopher, calling my podcast a waste of space and a waste of time. But he did provide a very useful link to yet another opinion on who's white, from this time from David Lane. I think it's time, after doing these three podcasts and this fourth one, to give some overview here, and that's what I'm trying to do. I disagree with Christoph that this is a waste of space and time, of course. That's up to people who listen to this podcast to decide for themselves. But I don't think I'm wasting my time, and that's why I do it. I understand that a lot of what I talk about is well understood by many of the people who are listening, and by most white nationalists. And most of them have understood it for a lot longer than I have. But I see a vast gap between what ordinary white folk know and what white nationalists know. And perhaps it's because it hasn't been very long since I was just an ordinary white man, and just an ordinary man who didn't really even put his whiteness in the forefront, that I see this need. And feel compelled to help bridge this gap that I see. So my podcasts are aimed not so much at hardcore white nationalists who really already know all of this stuff or think they know it. It's aimed more at people who are in the process of bridging that gap, of navigating that gap on their own, and who are looking for information and looking for other voices. It's not exactly like we have an overabundance of white people talking to white people about white history, about who's white. So I don't feel at all put off by Christopher's criticism. And in fact, I'm glad he linked this piece because I think it's very useful and I'm going to talk about it. Who is us is a very important question, and what's best for us can only be really discussed in a sane manner once you've settled who's us, at least mostly. And how did we come to be us? The history of us is also important. I would put that right after who is us and what's best for us. Is in order to know who is us and what's best for us, you'd have to know a bit of our history. Where did we come from? So let me launch into, let me first describe here who David Lane is. David Lane, on the site that Christopher linked to is described as being a member of an organization called Der Brüder Schweigen, or the Order, as they were commonly known, was a white nationalist organization that fought to reclaim America for the people whose ancestors struggled, sacrificed, and died to build it. They were men and women of different socioeconomic backgrounds, bound together by the ideals of racial solidarity and the creation of an autonomous white homeland. Well, this is what I believe in as well, and that's why David Lane carries a lot of weight in my mind. Brüder Schweigen is German for Silent Brotherhood or Brothers Remain Silent. David Lane is the one who wrote the 14 words, "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." This can be found on the About page for the White Network, because Carolyn and I both agreed that this was an inspiring and very simple and to the point statement of our purpose, and could be a rallying cry for the people that we would like to organize and the purpose for which we would like to organize. So let me read this piece here, which is titled "Who is White?" by David Lane. "Those of you who have over the years or decades either observed or participated in the resistance to the murder of the white race know that provocateurs have attacked the racial purity of professed leaders to impugn their motives. In my opinion, part of the reason this has successfully worked for the enemy is a mindset grown from an alien religion. A basic tenet of Judeo-Christianity and part of its fatal allure is that it allows inferior men to claim superior status without corresponding effort. A Judeo-Christian with an IQ of 90 and a dismal life history can get baptized, repeat a few ritualistic words, and presto, suddenly proclaim divine status superior to that of a man a million times his superior in intellect and character. The, quote, blue-eyed blonde, unquote, syndrome is typical of this mentality. And I say this advisedly, since I appear Nordic, tall, slender, blue-eyed, blonde. Yet I can only guess at the purity of my ancestry. My father of record sold my mother to his buddies and to strangers for booze money. So the gods alone know all. What I do know is this. I look white. I fight for white. I recognize the achievements of the white race. I want to preserve our kind. I am horrified that the beauty of the white Aryan woman may soon perish from the earth forever. I suffer for each white child tormented in America's interracial nightmare. I see beauty in a Celtic princess with brown or red hair and green eyes. I see beauty in the statuesque Nordic goddess with blue eyes and golden hair. I see beauty in the freckle-faced Irish lad. I see heroism in Robert J. Matthews and Richard Scutari, with their dark hair and eyes of green or brown, as well as in Frank de Silva, a fair-skinned Brüder's with a French-Portuguese name. Theirs is far greater nobility than 99% of those, quote, Nordic ideals, unquote, I might add. For those who boast of their purity, you have two parents, four grandparents, and eight grand-grandparents, great-grandparents, and so on. Go back 500 years or so and you have a million ancestors, a few more generations, and everyone who ever trod the lands of Europe is your ancestor, including Huns, Mongols, and Moors. There are no 100% pure Aryans as per 10,000 years ago. But we still do exist as a distinct and unique biological entity. The cultures and civilizations we create are beyond comparison. The beauty of our women, blondes, brunettes, redheads, green-eyed, blue-eyed, brown-eyed, is the desire of all men and the envy of all women. So we do not want to be derailed by gossip or speculation on who may be 1/16th Indian or who have some Italian, Spanish, or Portuguese blood. We are not going to debate over whether the collective remaining white gene pool is 95% or 97% pure Aryan. Surely it would be a tragedy if the various divisions of our race lose their distinctive traits and beauty. After we have secured the existence of our people and a future for all our children, hopefully we can take steps to preserve this diversity. But for now, we are going to accept the facts and circumstances as they exist. We are going to work together for the holy cause and will not tolerate provocateurs, divisions, or dissension. If someone looks white, acts white, fights white, then until their actions prove otherwise, they are our folk. On the other hand, regardless of pedigree or appearance, those who oppose, criticize, hinder, or fail to support our cause are no friends of ours. And that's the end. The main point, which he repeats twice, once at the beginning and once at the end, is I look white, I fight white, I recognize the achievements of the white race. And then at the end he repeats it, if someone looks white, acts white, fights white, then until their actions prove otherwise, they are our folk. So he thought that was important. I agree. I think that is very important. That's the ideological part, and it's matched by the actions, the fighting for white. It's a truism that any group is defined by those who will fight for that group, for its identity. They control that group in the end, if they don't die in the struggle to control it and what it is. It's a pragmatic, practical guideline. I like that aspect also of David Lane's thoughts on the matter. And I also like, and this reflects the pragmatic aspect of it, that accepting of facts and circumstances as they exist. But even so, and maybe in light of that, I have some comments and even some mild criticism to make of some of the things that he said. Early on, he makes the point of about Judeo-Christianity and calls it an alien religion. And I would agree with that. I think its source is alien, and I'm glad that he talks about Christianity and seems to direct his displeasure with the ideology rather than with the people. He describes that basic tenet of it with the fatal allure of being to allow inferior men to claim superior status without corresponding effort. And there I think he's a bit off the mark. While some Christians are like that, probably, and this holier-than-thou attitude, I think saying that describing modern-day Christians as having a superiority complex of any sort is off base. It's what characterizes modern-day Christians is the way they debase themselves, their self-abnegating attitude, you know, the setting aside of their own self-interest for the sake of others or for a belief or a principle. That's what characterizes modern-day Christians, and that's what makes them so easily manipulated by Jews. There's also a deeper phenomena going on here, and this, fittingly, has to do with the other half of what I've been addressing with this series of podcasts, is this history of European history of who we are. And that is that this egalitarian spirit that we see in expressed in Christianity and by Christians seems to be an old European personality trait. That's the kind of societies that the old Europeans created versus this aristocratic, hierarchical, might makes right type of society and personality trait that seems to have come from the Aryans. And Europeans, who we are, is really a blending of those two. And that's why we see both personality traits in our people. And that's why there is such conflict between our people, between those two personality traits and between those two types of society. The worst thing about Judeo-Christianity, or Christian Zionism is another term for it, is that it puts Jews first. It puts Jews and Jewish interests first. It is based on this myth of eternal friendship and alliance between Christians and Jews that just it completely contradicts the story that Jews normally tell in every other context, which is paints them as victims of Europeans, and especially the Christians, for centuries, if not millennia. So it's a lot of nonsense, and that's what needs to be pointed out to Christian Zionists and anyone who professes that kind of deluded belief and puts Jews on a pedestal. The Christians are always expected to serve and defer to the Jews, especially since World War II. And that's something that they should rightly be made aware of. And one example of this that I've seen, another thing that shows that this is a little bit off base, this criticism of Christianity or attributing it purely to Christianity, is this counter-jihad phenomena that I had some experience with, and I will eventually do a podcast or two to summarize. But to quickly mention it here, it's this movement that developed since David Lane was put in prison long ago in the 80s. It's developed in the 2000s, after the turn of the century, after 9/11, really. And it's misleading patriotic whites, whites who would otherwise be nationalists and be attracted to nationalist themes, are instead redirected by these counter-jihadist thinkers and speakers to instead serve Israel. And only a fraction of them are Christian and do it out of Christian beliefs. Many of the rest are secular. Atheist, even. So another point that David Lane makes is that his ideal is merit-based or meritocratic, and the divide he sees is between those who will fight versus those who, regardless of pedigree or appearance, oppose, criticize, hinder, or fail to support our cause. And he says that they're no friends of ours. As I said, any group is defined by those who will fight for it. So I agree with that aspect of what he's saying. I'd point out, though, that that's the Aryan way of seeing it, not the old European way of seeing it. Lane is very critical of and shows his distaste for this blue-eyed blonde syndrome, what he calls the blue-eyed blonde syndrome, Nordic ideals. It's another dismissive term he uses for it. Which he means, because he's drawing an analogy to Christianity, accepting others simply because they have blue eyes and blonde hair, and regardless of how they act, how white they are, how white they act, I should say, and how hard they fight for whites. But in my experience, the divide between the blue-eyed blonde Nordic types is this idea of Nordicism, and it's never bothered me much, but I can see this struggle between the Meds, the more Italian or Southern Europeans, and the Northern Europeans, the Nordicists, the people who have this more specific white identity, whether North or South, and the bickering that they sometimes do. It's there's an element of whiter than thou to the Nordicists. But these are Nordicists. These are people who have a white identity and who will fight for whiteness. They maybe are, in some cases, too good for white, but they are, and that causes the resentment of Southern Europeans, Southern whites. But Lane doesn't seem to be driving at that. He's driving at more the free ride sort of thing, where people are accepted just because of how they look. And I could agree on that, because I think there is two parts to whiteness. It's racial, it's biological, and it's ideological. Just being white biologically is not enough, really. We do need people to recognize who they are and what they are in order to motivate them to bond with their kin, with the other white people, to see who is us in order to achieve what is best for us collectively. Just a final note here, he is critical of those who boast of their purity, and he says, go back 500 years and you'll have a million ancestors, and everyone who's ever trod the lands of Europe is your ancestor. And that's not really true. I know, and I'll talk about this a bit more in the DNA podcast that I'll do in the future, but he's maybe doesn't know the distinction, or didn't know, between genetic versus genealogical ancestors. And though you may have a million ancestors, first of all, not all of them are unique. The further back you go, the more likely there are crossovers, common ancestors. And you can't just count them up and say, you know, so many generations back, that means I have 2 to the nth ancestors, because some of them were the same. But more importantly, there's only so many slots in your DNA. You don't have, it's not infinitely divisible. You don't have one millionth of your millionth ancestor somewhere embedded in your DNA, or you, it's not likely anyway. Let's put it that way. Because there are a fixed number of slots, and it's a small number of slots, relatively, surprisingly small, and I haven't been able to find the reference that I ran into a couple of years ago about this, but it's somewhere between, I don't know, 50 and 500 genetic ancestors that you can possibly have before they start getting lost in the shuffle. You know, the pieces get left behind. The next time you have children, you leave behind some of those little bits. But I agree with what Lane says, that we still do exist as a distinct and unique biological entity. Even with all of these minor quibbles that I have with what he's said, I agree entirely on that point. Whoever we are, however we think of us, we have an interest in preserving us. Now, he goes out of his way here to try and gloss over and patch together people who might be 1/16th Indian or have some Italian and so forth. And this is a little bit different than John Law's attitude about excluding people who have a partial non-white ancestry, at least from the discussion of whiteness and what's good for whites. John Law was very unsympathetic to that and wish to exclude them, whereas David Lane seems to be more inclusive and say, hey, we're all in this together as long as you're willing to fight, and that's the point that he finishes with. But otherwise, there are some similar strains of thought here as what John Law laid out in that Stormfront, the fusion of Stormfront and National Alliance policy about preserving diversity and respecting the fact that there is diversity amongst the European peoples and not wanting to just blend it all out of existence, even just amongst Europeans. That's not the goal. And to not tolerate provocateurs, that recognizing that this is very defensive sounding. All of these pieces that I've read seem to be at least in part reacting to constant criticism. And I say there's good reason for that. The divisions that are being exploited by our enemies are real. That's the point I was making about the old European egalitarian attitudes and of the hunter-gatherers, the old hunter-gatherers, versus the hierarchical attitudes, might makes right, of the Aryans. Those were there before we had any external enemies, or when we were our own external enemies, before the Jews. And that's another bone I could pick here with David Lane's piece, is that he doesn't explicitly remark on the Jews. He makes an offhand reference to them as Judeo-Christians, in relation to Christians. And I wonder why not, why he didn't mention Jews. I don't think it's because he was, well, I really don't know, but I don't think it was trying to be diplomatic, because I know that the order was, they knew, they understood the Jewish problem. And the Jewish question. Maybe they just thought, or he just thought, it was so well understood that he took it for granted that he didn't need to say anything about it. But that, again, that's why I do these podcasts, because I think it is important. And I want to drive home the point that it is important. I realize that repeating this and constantly mentioning the Jews, bringing up the Jews, plays into the stupid, crazy, evil characterization that's used to pathologize us and demonize us. But it's the reality. They control the politics. They control the media in this country. They control academia. So we have to face that. That's a reality. It's crucial, really, that Jews aren't white and that we recognize that. And it's especially crucial in what is otherwise, here in Lane's piece, a call for unity. Because Jews appear to many white people to be, at least superficially, just another kind of European. Maybe they have an odd religion and a liberal bias and big noses and they're kind of pushy. But common sense just doesn't cut it for those people. It needs to be explained to them what the Jews have done, what the history is, who we are, and how that's distinct from Jews, and how Jews are a separate people. In fact, they're totally hostile to white people. Enemy number one. So from Metapedia, let me finish here with a reading from Metapedia on the Order. It says, the nine founding members of the group swore an oath that began, I, as a free Aryan man, hereby swear an unrelenting oath upon the green graves of our sires, upon the children in the wombs of our wives, upon the throne of the God Almighty, sacred is his name, to join together in holy union with those brothers in this circle and to declare forthright that from this moment on I fear no death. I have no fear of death, no fear of foe, that I have a sacred duty to do whatever is necessary to deliver our people from the Jew and bring total victory to the Aryan race. So that's why I say that it's pretty clear that the Order and David Lane understood the Jewish question. I wish I understood what what his beef was, why he thought it was a waste of time, but it would probably be a waste of time to ask him, and he'd consider it a waste of time to explain it. But I don't think that this subject is a waste of time. I could probably do a part 55 and just keep on going with various aspects of what it is to be white and what our history is. But at some point I have to cut it off. Because there are other topics I want to talk about that are more peripheral. They're not directly involved with our identity. And I want to get back to what I was talking about, the other half of this. I had intended to spend the second half of this program talking about it, but that is old Europe and Neolithic Europe. That woman Gimbutas and her associates regard the terms Neolithic Europe, old Europe, and pre-Indo-European as synonymous. Those are all synonyms. And that's the other half. I've talked about the Aryans, and as we see, it continues to come up in references to white identity, who whites are. We heard Dr. Pierce mention the Aryans. Erman Vinson, who I started off with, was talking about Aryans. And David Lane refers to the Aryans. So it's important to understand, who are these people talking about? But there's another half to whiteness. And it's actually more complex than that. But there are the old Europeans and the old European civilization. And I'll talk about that more. I have a lot more to talk about there, maybe another two installments just based on old Europe and the old Europeans. A few books to refer you to read, because a lot has been written on the subject. And that's it for this week. I'll see you next time. Please join me.